Does the Sermon on the Mount make keeping the law harder or easier? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm your host, Alden Thompson, and my conversation partners as we explore Jesus and his law are Dave Thomas, Dean of the School of Theology at Walla Walla, and Professor of Biology, Joe Galusha. And I want to toss that question to them. Does the Sermon on the Mount make keeping the law harder or easier?
Well, I think if you see it as a list of rules and obligations, if keeping the law merely means fulfilling a group of stipulations, it makes it harder. I think if we see keeping the law as an outgrowth of a journey with God, then I think it makes it easier.
Okay, Joe?
And I agree with that. I think that it is much more difficult to stay at keeping specific items, obeying certain rules. It is much more difficult if we move to the area of motives. And I've always been kind of pricked at heart when, as a teacher, I've needed to judge motives, seeing a particular behavior in my class, and I need to decide, you know, why is that being done as opposed to what do you see? I think that this is about a matter of the heart, and it is very, very difficult for man to judge that.
Yeah, and see, I think one of the challenges, if the law is a set of stipulations that you have to keep regardless of attitude, then you are disconnected from the law, and it actually is a pain. But you have a sense of satisfaction. Well, I didn't do that, and I did do that, and you come to the end and say, I've kept the law, when in reality you might be a complete rebel. At heart.
Let me add to that, that I think that there may be something that is almost age-specific. When I work with children, I try to be very explicit about things they can accomplish to be successful or to make the group happy. We do specific things. I don't tell them just to love their brother. I actually help them work that out. And I think that we're at a transition point here with Jesus saying, behavior isn't enough. True love, true law-keeping is a matter of the heart.
Well, that's true in so many areas of life. For example, diet. If you have somebody whose life has been catastrophic and they've made a new commitment and are now going to be more careful with their diet, you can't simply say, eat the best food that's available. They don't have a clue. You know, they have to be taught A, B, C, D, and in the course of time, they'll get a better feel for it. But you start out, and that's true in many disciplines as well. In fact, my favorite example comes from physics. I've had a number of physics students say, actually, when you start out physics, they teach you lies.
Just so you can understand.
You get started there. And then when you get to the upper division levels, then they say, now, all that stuff that we taught you, the beginning, that's not really true, see, but that's the only place where you can get started, see, and so I think we need to be very careful, and when it comes to the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is going internal, and my guess is if you try to exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees by adding more things into your list, you will absolutely miss the principle. Now, let's take a look at the comparisons here, and I should mention here an insight which my former colleague Ernie Bercy mentioned just fairly recently. These are known as the six great antitheses. Antitheses, I think that's the way it's said.
Yeah, that's a good word.
You have heard, but I say. It happened six times. But Ernie pointed out that the word used, which is translated in English as but, is a much more gentle word. It's closer to and. You have heard, and I say. See? So you have to think here that Jesus is not just replacing. He is saying there is something more that you need to think about. Now, let's take the first one, which is maybe the easiest one to deal with. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit murder. Okay? And what does Jesus go on to say?
He said, you're not even to get angry.
Okay, which is easier to keep from murdering somebody or from being angry?
From murdering somebody is easier to keep away from.
I agree with that.
Yeah. In fact, you can't pass civil laws against being angry.
Do we know any place where that's done?
I suppose you could, but...
When I was a child, I'll tell you, I was told, don't get angry, or I was told to go and say I was sorry for something I had done.
But that's because of the way you had manifested your anger, see? But I remember one man, he was actually a fairly obedient chap, he was commanded in one situation to sit down. And he said, I'm sitting down, but inside I'm standing up.
I think I understand that spirit.
I'm sitting down, but I'm inside, I'm still standing up.
You know? That's right.
But you see, if you control your anger, and I do think there's some value in controlling your anger, and our age say, well, let it all out. Well, I'm not sure that that's always advantageous.
No, no.
But the point is that if you really want to fulfill the law, is what Jesus said, if you're going to fulfill the law, fill it full of meaning, you not only should avoid murder, but you should root out murderous anger. Not all anger. It's murderous anger that's wrong, see? And so I think you can get a both-and approach there, but how in the world do you root out murderous anger, see? And how do you decide which kinds of angers are right and which ones are wrong, see?
Only a change of heart will solve that problem, Holden.
You're absolutely right.
And maybe not immediately. It may be over time.
And my guess is when that change of heart comes, and this will get in more to concepts of righteousness by faith, when that change of heart comes, you're not going to stand on the corner and pat yourself on the back, I thank God that I'm not like other people. You will be with the publican saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Because there is no way that human beings can actually keep the law as described in the Sermon on the Mount. Now, let's take the next one, which is a very difficult one for men. Adultery. If you even look at a woman with lust in your heart, you've broken the command. Now, see, there are lots of strictures, especially in a Christian community, for not committing adultery. But I have never been able to know how to draw the line with the inappropriate lustful look.
Well, you mean there's no law you can write about it.
True.
Yeah.
And I can usually sense if I'm inappropriately attracted. But even that is very difficult. Should I blame the woman? Do I run away? See, those are more difficult questions. In fact, Jesus' relationship to women was such that he could do things that I could never do.
But to people who think that you can keep the law, they need to think about this one a little bit. You'll discover that it's not possible.
Yeah, it's not possible.
Let me think. I had always hoped that there was nothing wrong in noticing something beautiful. As a biologist, I watch things that grow, flowers, amazing, amazing living things. I watch things that fly, notice some marvelous gulls and their friends. And I think that there are very, very appropriately clothed human beings, male and females, that are appropriate to a circumstance, that are balanced and symmetrical, and they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I think that the issue comes where there is an inappropriate desire either to participate with a party in some
misbehavior.
Correct, misbehavior. Mm-hmm. I hope that we can appreciate an attractive colleague, male or female, when they are dressed appropriately and to an occasion.
Yeah, and I think there is, I think that men need to be a little careful here that they don't get into excuse making. I have a friend, a woman, who was in a Sabbath school one day, and the teacher was going on and on about how women tempt men and, this kind of thing. And finally, after listening to this going on and on, she raised her hand and said, and by the way, the man was very nicely dressed in a good-looking suit. And she said, well, she says, what really gets my attention is a man dressed in a nice-looking suit. And the teacher was silenced pretty quickly. He realized that he'd been railing on the women, but it... anyway, I think we should go to the next one, Alden. This one is troublesome.
That one's troublesome, okay. Well, let me go down to one that we can deal with, and it's important to deal with, the lex talionis, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. See, that's one of the comparisons. Jesus says, not eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, but love your enemies.
Because eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth is a bad strategy. Because if you actually live by it strictly, pretty soon everybody will be eyeless and toothless.
That's right. But the important line to remember is that it was given to limit revenge, not to encourage it. Because typically, if you let forces of evil go in, people don't stop with an eye for an eye.
No.
You know, you cut my head off, I mean, you step on my toe, I'll blast your brains out. See?
Yeah.
So the civil law, you can go by something like that. But internally, how in the world do you love your enemies? See?
And see, that this eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth is a very different dynamic to loving somebody, because there's no element of forgiveness necessarily in lex talionis.
Yeah, that's true.
This, you know, when I read that, it was new to me, the idea of limiting revenge. I can tell you, in the animal kingdom, there is very, very, very infrequent mass murder or war.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that occasionally happens in some insects, but most animals sense when they have won, and they do not go further than they need to do. It's essentially limiting their hostile aggression. And this idea that in our own species, here we come along and say that part of an appropriate response should be limiting hostility or aggression. Very interesting to me from a biological perspective.
Although if you ever seen the struggle between lions and hyenas, there is revenge. And there is punishment to the point of death for more than one animal. But anyway, that's another thing.
Well, it's important we could tuck in here, and we need several more hours to finish the proper discussion here. But I've forgotten what I was going to say.
What about enemies? We ought to touch on that.
We ought to touch on enemies. That's right. Yep. We have a few seconds left to touch about enemies. This is one that you don't find in the Old Testament. You've heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. There's no place in the Old Testament where it says, hate your enemy. But you do have some very vivid Psalms.
Mm-hmm.
Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? Do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with perfect hatred. I count them my enemies. Psalm 139. So you certainly have the illustrations of hatred there. So is this the goal that we should have? To love our enemies?
Yeah.
It is.
Very difficult.
Yeah.
I think it's a very difficult issue.
Now, for next week, we shift gears completely, and we're going to talk about Christ and the Sabbath. I want to thank Dave and Joe for your contributions today. I want to thank Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer, and for all of you for listening in. For the good word, I'm Alden.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.